Welcome to Faye's Knowledge. If you're interested in learning about business, marketing, and personal development, this podcast is just for you. And I say it's just for you because in order to fail, we have to be willing to try. And once you try to do things for yourself, now you're learning and gaining the experience for yourself, which turns into knowledge. So this is the right podcast for you if you're looking for business, marketing, and personal development information, because now you have a chance to learn from others that have been through what you're currently going through or currently having experience, and this is the place for you to grow and develop to help become the best version of yourself. Subscribe to this podcast, and if you really enjoyed towards the end, leave a comment on your biggest takeaway from this specific episode, so that way we can deliver more content, more audio, more videos that can not only help you in your journey but can help propel you. And by propel, I'm actually saying that can help grow and push you forward in your journey. Again, welcome to Failure's Knowledge. Enjoy this episode, and please don't forget to subscribe and wait towards the end and leave a comment about this specific video, your biggest takeaway from this.
I never raised a single dollar of funding in my life. And I've always kind of had this work ethic, like summer breaks, I would work 80 hours a week and, you know, whatever I had to, like, I want to make money. This wave's going to last forever. So I start hiring, you know, all these salespeople and engagement people and operations people. And I sold everything. Like I sold, you know, $10 million worth. And then my partner saw the ad for it, entered the information, and then nothing happened. Like, oh my gosh, once you have enough money to fix it, you should fix it.
What does failure is knowledge mean to you?
Failure is experience. Experience is wisdom. You know, these three words go together really, really well.
Brian, again, thank you for coming on to the Phase Knowledge Podcast. Just have one question for you. Why Plug Technologies?
Yeah, so Plug is really focused on the world of Latin America and nearshoring. I'm sure a lot of your audience knows what offshoring is. You know, you've got a big ocean in between. And we like to think of, you know, as Americans, it's like the world revolves around us. So for us, offshoring is Asia. But it's really relative. You know, nearshoring is same time zone. So if you're in Australia, you might nearshore to the Philippines. But if you're in the States, you'll offshore to the Philippines, right? So anyway, about 10 years ago, I got in this world of nearshoring, and that's Latin America, all about connecting talent. How it got started was kind of a long story, but a little bit of a wild one, if you'd like me to get into it.
Please.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So I was in San Francisco at the time, grew up in the Midwest, but ended up, you know, moving to San Francisco, kind of caught that tech startup bug and wanted to be like right in the middle of everything. So worked for a bunch of these. And you know, when I got out there, I had like massive imposter syndrome. You know, I went to a school that nobody had ever heard of called Southern Illinois. Everybody seemed to go to like MIT or Harvard or Stanford. And I just thought everyone was like way smarter than me. And what was I doing there? So it took a few years to kind of build some confidence and realized, like, you know, I had a few things going for me, and but I needed some time to develop that. And I kind of caught this bug, like, you know what, I think I could be a founder. And I don't know any entrepreneurs. You know, my dad worked for the same company for his whole life, and you know, I don't know anybody in that world. And I actually had this like wild vision that I wanted to be an expat in Asia. So not Latin America, Asia. You know, I wanted to be in like the midst of Singapore or Shanghai and like these big skyscrapers. I felt like that's where the future was. So I ended up doing a MBA program where it was kind of cool. It was with UCLA, and everybody knows what UCLA is. But nobody knows what NUS is, which is National University of Singapore. And, you know, again, Americans, we're kind of focused on ourselves. But NUS happens to be like one of the top schools in all of Asia. So I thought, okay, if I get this degree from NUS, it's going to open up my world and I'm going to have all this opportunity. And it didn't work at all like that. Like, you know, I'm trying to make stuff happen over Skype. you know, and this is like 10, 11 years ago, nobody's biting. They're like, you know, who is this? Who's this guy, you know, from California? So I knew one guy in Shanghai who was really successful, but I like barely knew him, you know, just like we had a few mutual contacts. So I cold pitched him. Hey, like, hire me, I'll work for you. And then he asked if I knew any Mandarin. I'm like, well, no. All right. I like your initiative, though. Come back if you've got another idea. So I'm like, all right, that's cool. So, you know, I was in San Francisco where fintechs were really huge. And fintechs are, you know, the next generation of, like, finance software disrupting banks. So you get rid of, you know, lending and wealth management and all that stuff with these little startups. So tons of money, business guys, product visions, and they could care less about how their software was built. So, okay, I think I got something here. So put together this like massive pitch deck, forecasts, models, discounted cash. I'm like learning how to do all this stuff on the fly. And I pitched him. He's like, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. So it'd be like a consulting shop building stuff for them. And then he agreed. I never raised a single dollar of funding in my life. And he agreed to give me $2 million to build this company. Now it was tranched, which means like small pieces at a time, but still, you know, that was cool. So I realized that Asia probably wasn't the right place for this. San Francisco would eat up all the cash in like a year, you know, $2 million doesn't get you very far at all in a place like that. So, I started looking around. And a few years prior, I had done like a solo backpacker, stay in hostels in Argentina. Really liked it out there. I thought people spoke English. Like it seemed like there was this first world talent locked in a third world country, you know? And I started to put the software developers there. I moved there. So I spent a year just kind of living in it. You know, everything from like the tree lined streets and the best steak you ever had in your life, Terrell, to like crazy inflation and menu prices and chalk and subway strikes and chaos. So I kind of got to see all of it. But grew it, you know, we grew it to 80 people. And then we started to settle. My family started to settle in Hawaii. We got two kids. And it was just too crazy going from Hawaii to Argentina anymore. So I sold my share in that, but decided to stay in this nearshore track. So Plug is my third company. All three are still standing, still operating. Plug's got about 100 or so people. And we're basically the broker of companies that want Latin America talent and they don't know how to do it. You know, like they don't know where to start, where to go, how the labor laws, hardware, custom shipping, all the stuff works. And that's where we come in.
I like how you use the word talent a lot as you are speaking, as you are communicating. And one thing as I learned while doing a lot of research on you is that you have a lot of background in recruiting and finding talent and connecting the right people in the right positions. And you don't get that overnight. You don't get that knack for people, that knack for skill, just for not, you know, communicating with a lot of people. And when I started to understand, like, this man understand business, because it's business around people. Business is a people business. And if you're not around people, you're not in business. And so how did you discover the importance of people when you were starting out?
So I think there's two threads there. So, or maybe three. So I think the first thread is, you're right. I got into recruiting, and the reason I got into that is, you know, like very first job out of school, I'm going to date myself a little bit. So I'm 45 now, which sounds crazy to say. But when I was like,
first job ever, I was like an HR assistant, and you know, like filing and compliance, and also, and you know, also doing some recruiting. And I've always kind of had this work ethic. Like summer breaks, I would work 80 hours a week, and you know, whatever I had to, like, I wanted to make money, you know, and work, you know. I wasn't afraid of that ever. You know, I was tarring driveways when I was young and like whatever I had to do. And I was like busting my tail. You know, there were like nights I'd stay till 8, 9 o'clock at that office and try to fill all the seats in this call center or the whatever roles that they were trying to fill at the time, mortgage brokers, anything. And my salary never changed, no matter what happened, right? So my pay never changed. And I kind of brought that up, and they're like, well, yeah, I mean, you're an HR assistant. Like, what do you expect? This is just like one of your responsibilities. So like immediately, or you know what I think happened? Like the same week, it's funny how this happens in life. The same week I got like a cold call from somebody from a recruiting agency. I know I didn't take this job, but I still remember this conversation, you know, like 20 years ago of, so, you know, your compensation is variable. I'm like, well, what does that mean? Well, like the better you do, the more you'll make. What? There's jobs like this in recruiting. So, you know, I was in, started interviewing. I was out the door really fast, you know, on, you know, working in this staffing part where the more, it's just like real estate agents, the more you do, the more you make. So that kind of got me in that people track, was really like my work ethic and competitive mind. Like, and I was that guy that not only knew my stats, but I knew everybody else's stats in the office. You know, I'm like, know all the ratios, and I mean, I was like intense with this stuff. So that got me into it. And then when I look at the success or failures of the businesses I had, and a lot of failures, I mean, you said it, Terrell, like people are everything, man. You know, we could talk all day about AI and all this other stuff, but you know, your business is really dependent on the quality of hiring and the quality of leadership you do. You know this, you know, as a Marine Corps veteran, like it matters, you know, you really need to get the right people on the bus and then, you know, lead them down the right path. And the third thing I'll say is I can't comment on like every industry, but the tech industry, generally, these companies raise a ton of money. And about 70% of that is allocated towards labor. So you hear about like OpenAI raises, you know, $1 billion, or, you know, back in the day, Uber, you know, raises $100 million. There's, remember, these are tech companies, so they're not buying cars. Some of that's for like hardware and servers and stuff. But really it's like software developers and salespeople and whatever else can drive their business. So once you realize that talent's kind of like the center of your organization, and that's where the money's going, that's where the money's flowing. So there's some pressure if you can handle it, but it's also, I think, the highest impact role you can have in a company.
Okay. So you made me think about, so I'm in the process of learning how to manage a team or work with a team, work and start bringing people on. And a lot of people, a lot of business owners, a lot of leaders say that you have to put steps in place. You have to put systems in place. So I'm like, all right, cool. Let me start to put the system in place. That alone is so overwhelming, because it's now I have to figure out what I'm doing, put the system in place, and then go and continue to do it on a consistent basis. When you start to bring people in, they have to follow the system that you have created for your business. And when I start, because I mean, I'm in another entrepreneurship program as well, and they say, and I'm asking questions, like I'm paying attention to small details. And this morning I came in, I was like, yesterday I saw that you had a checklist and you're teaching somebody from the checklist. Why did you do that? Like, well, they can see it. They can literally see how to do it. Brian, when I tell you, that blew my mind because it was so simple, but so profound. Although you're in the tech space, you're still in the people business. You still have to combine the two. How did you learn how to work with the systems? Hold on. How did you learn how to work with your team around the system that you developed?
Yeah. So I'll be honest, I've got things that I'm good at, but I've never really been a system person. I think so. I've done something that not a lot of people have done, and that I've gone from like 0 to 4 million a couple times. But I've never cracked that $10 million, you know, mark as an entrepreneur. So that's a huge shortcoming by me of, I need better systems. I need better workflows. I need better repeatable stuff. Because to your point, you'll get to a spot in your business where the people are kind of the choke point, like all the decisions kind of go through them. And if you're in a business where it's like super repeatable, like same type of project for the same type of customers over and over and over again, you can super systematize that. But if you play in like the custom world, you know, where, tell me about your specific needs, let's try to map that. It's a little harder. So there's a few things we systematize and we try to train the people. But this is my big thing that I'm trying to work on, you know, and I'm not intuitively good at it. So I need to have good systems people around me.
That is, and like how you keep reverting back to the people. The people is so important, and I'm learning that. I'm in the process of learning the importance of, you know, putting things in place, getting around the right people, and just and it shifts your mindset. It helps you think differently. Yeah. And when I started to like do research on it, I was like, man, this man understand the importance of people.
Yeah.
You spoke about your failure and how you have a lot of different failures. I want to ask you, what has been your biggest failure while having all three of your startup companies, tech companies?
No, they're all service.
Oh, okay. I was like, yeah.
Service, but, customers are pretty tech heavy though.
Okay. So what was your biggest failure from your three startups that you have founded, started, and have been growing?
Yeah, well, I think that real first serious company where I got the investor money, I made a mistake that I think a lot of people do, which is, I didn't come up in the world as a sales guy, right? I was a talent guy. So sales was always this like intimidating foreign thing. And I'm passionate about what I'm talking about here today, but I'm like a pretty reserved guy. I'm pretty introverted, you know. I'm not the center of attention at any table, you know. I kind of observe, and then I've got a few really close friends, but I'm not like that extroverted sales guy that everybody kind of thinks about, right? So I used a lot of that initial investment to hire experienced salespeople. You know, and in this industry, nobody's working straight commission. You know, they're all making six-figure base salaries, you know, plus all the upside. And then you got to give them the tools, the environment. Like, this gets expensive. So I put way too much hope, way too much of my own company's success or failure based on these guys being able to like make magic happen out of thin air, right? So both of them kind of sucked. They cost a lot of money. And I also didn't really know how to manage them. So it was just like a whole disaster. And then, you know, fast forward, the second company that I had, I started with, I just used no more investor money. I just used $2,000 of my own money. And then, you know, that grew, you know, we've invoiced over at least over $10 million by now, you know,
just from that little $2,000 investment has turned into, you know, $10 million of invoices, right, for clients. And I sold everything. Like I sold, you know, $10 million worth. And I think initially I overestimated, and I'm also not trying to make myself like an amazing salesperson, but what I overestimated is other people doing my job. I am the founder. I need to be the head of sales for a long time. So I know what customers care about. I know how to make the business happen. I know how to position. I know the offer. I know the rebuttals. I know the issues. And I just outsourced all that, you know, just like somebody else is going to figure this out. So when I had to have like all the pressure on my back and it's my own money this time, you know, you're a little more tighter with your own money too. So, you know, you're not like, you know, it's that kind of old adage of when it's investor money, you know, it's like, all right, I just sent the $50,000 wire. When it's your own money, you're like, okay, here's $200. You better, you know, get this thing perfect. So, you know, I went from like a wild spender to a cheapskate pretty quick when it was my own money. But you also, you know, I took on the pressure. And I think the last point I'll make here is you kind of have the superpower as a founder, because customers, no matter how small your business is, they know no one will care more or be more passionate about it than you as the founder. So even if you say the wrong thing, you don't really qualify it properly, you're not doing all the textbook processes, you'll learn all that stuff because people will give you way more grace than they would ever give to like a career salesperson.
And and I appreciate the phase that you just shared, because, you know, although you raised $2 million, that is a big milestone. It wasn't your money, which means that you have a different perspective on it. You have like a, hey, man, this money came to me, at least on my speculation. It came to me. I'm going to buy any, everything. I give you a prime example. So ever since I've been in business, I've been in like officially learning more about business and doing business for the last 2 years. But I've been podcasting over the last half a decade. And the last 2 years, I was like, okay, by any means, it doesn't matter what I'm going to do. My investment is the business. Mm-hmm. And my wife, she get upset and say, well, she don't necessarily get upset, but sometimes she want to go and travel, go to different parts of the world, different countries. I'm like, listen, I'm tapped out. My money is going towards the business and it has to work. And
yeah,
it's not going to work overnight.
Right.
However, now that I'm learning about business, now that I'm doing business, now that I'm like understanding what to sell, what not to sell, how to offer, based off me spending my own money, Brian, it gave me a different perspective, because I'm learning how to do finances. I'm learning how to sell, I'm learning how to market. When I start bringing people onto the team, it's like, well, you don't have to figure this out. I've already spent the money to figure it out. All you have to do is just practice, rehearse, and improve. When I started to see this transformation that I'm actually becoming a business owner because I'm using my own money, not to say that using other people's money is not, it's bad, but what I'm saying is that when you use your own money, you start to penny pitch. You start to notice smaller details like, man, I can do this a little bit better, a little bit cheaper. Yeah,
totally. And
how did that help you? So you've had three different businesses. How did that help you to understand, like, although you can spend a lot of money on certain people, certain projects, certain marketing and things of that nature, how do you identify what's most important to spend your money and time on?
Yeah. So as you were talking, my answer might be like just a little bit off center on that question, but it's also another mistake that I think is important to share. In that second business, I totally screwed up the timing of how to spend my money, right? So in 2019, you know, it seemed like, you know, kind of built this nice business pretty quickly. Then we all know what happened in early 2020, right? So this is a project-based business. All the projects got
halted. So all of a sudden I went from like, man, I'm doing pretty good to I'm going to feed my newborn son. Right. And it was like 7 months of pain, right? To how am I going to, you know, pay bills? And then all of a sudden, like the rockets went off, and we all remember like end of 2020, 21, 22, people were just spending money like crazy, quiet quitting, salaries were never higher, you know, just crazy. But I had been punched in the face a few many times. So I was nervous about this growth. Like, is it going to come back? You know? So I waited way too long to spend. And I'll give you an example. So this business was doing recruiting for recruiters. So tech companies wanted to hire engineers in the US, but they needed a lot of recruiting horsepower to compete, you know, like you got Amazon and Facebook and Google, and everybody's reaching out to, you know, every engineer 50 times. So companies just need to pay for recruiting horsepower. There's like unlimited budget for it. So, you know, this business just took off like crazy. And my product was really recruiters that I could lease out by the hour. And at peak, we had like 60 recruiters. We were leasing out, you know, 40 hours a week. So I was making money on every hour that they worked. And I had an internal person who was like recruiting those recruiters, like basically growing my, like delivering my product, you know, in a way. But I was so cheap that she could only do it on her off hours. She had to be billing all the time, you know, on her own project. So I'd like pay her some money if she was successful outside of hours. And I didn't even pay like the $7 so she could have her own company Gmail. You know, she's like doing this from her own email. And man, was I like so slow to just make even the smallest investments. And then you flip that to the other side. Finally, like April of 2022, I'm like, all right, you know, like this wave's going to last forever. So I start hiring, you know, all these salespeople and engagement people and operations people. And then all of a sudden my overhead got crazy. Meanwhile, my revenues start dropping. So when it's your own money, like I think we all make the mistake of being too tight-fisted. But on the other side, there was a guy who was maybe just a few years ahead of me in the same space. And he sold his business right at the buzzer before like the market crashed. But when I look back in like the hardest time, he was pushing all his chips on the table and it paid off, you know? So he made the bet of his lifetime and it paid off like you can never imagine. You know, meanwhile, I'm like a wounded animal, just, you know, making tiny bets. So all I can say is that, you know, wisdom is the best teacher, you know, experience leads to wisdom. And, you know, I've had to make all these mistakes to be where I'm at.
Okay, so now, again, I appreciate you for sharing that and being open with me, because it's people might think entrepreneurship is easy, but then when you go into it, it's like, well, there's so many things that you have to learn that you just can't necessarily read in the book, or you just can't get lectured on. You have to literally go through it. You have to literally experience it. Then when you experience it, you become a better business owner. So I appreciate you for sharing that with me. So we're going to go off script, and what we're going to do, we're going to role play, and I'm going to come to Brian and say, hey, Brian, I want to get into the tech space. I want to launch a business. I want to solve a problem, but I have no idea where to start. I'm figuring out like I have some ideas. I come to Brian. What are three tips that you would give a new startup to launch their business?
Well, I think the first one is,
you don't have a business until you have a customer, right? And that's something I tell everybody, because I've been in this like weird space where it's 3 a.m. and I'm playing with the commas on my website, you know, like, stop. Go chase a customer, you know? So I think that's number one. I think number two is really more like a 1A. Like, don't talk to people that are close to you, because they don't want to hurt your feelings, right? And I see this actually a lot in Hawaii, where people will say harmony over truth over here, right? Because that's a small island. No one wants to offend anybody. It's just kind of peaceful. It's cool. It's, you know, live in harmony. But that means nobody's telling each other the truth. Like, yo, your software sucks, you know? They're just like, oh yeah, you know, good job. Keep it up, you know? So that's like one, and then 1A. And then I think, you know, two or three, whatever you want to say, is pick your partners, your investors, your early people, like really align, really vet. I mean, it's like getting married, you know, you got to be in it for the long haul. So you should, use AI like to help you develop a whole bunch of questions. Like, I'm thinking about getting into business with this person. Could be for the long term. You know, nobody ever thinks that this like little idea, and then you tinker with it for a couple of years and fail, get a little success, fail a little success. But sometimes these things take off, and then you're stuck with the wrong person, you know, and you've got resentment, or they're holding equity in the company and they don't contribute, or they haven't been around in a while, or you have long-term vision clashes. And so anyway, I think that would be my third piece of advice, is like really vet who's going to be in your circle on this journey.
Okay. So just to recap, number one, you don't have a business till you have a paying customer. So find your customer first before you set up all the technicality.
Yeah.
Step number two, get around people that will tell you the truth instead of spare your feelings. And then step number three, what was the last one? Was that step three or step two?
And then number three is really align on the people, you know.
Align the people.
Everything, yeah.
Align the people. Okay. So just to confirm, just to go over the three steps again, since I messed it up. Number one was what was number one again? I just forgot to quit, my bad.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. So number one, you don't have a business until you got a customer.
Number two?
Number two is you want people to tell you the truth. So make sure you're not just asking your mom, but you're asking, you know, people that will be truthful with you. And then number three is align on the long-term vision early.
I appreciate that. So for those who are interested in starting your business, follow those three steps. So for Plug Technologies and Nearshore, is it Plug Technology or just Nearshore?
Well, we do Nearshore, but the company is called Plug Technologies.
Okay, got it. Thank you for the clarification. So for Plug Technologies, when you start to see, okay, you have the people, you have the funding, and you have the problem that you're solving consistently, I read while I was doing research that you aim to come away with the meeting with the complete job description, hiring bar, and timeline. And you really focus on the customer experience to the point where they don't have to figure out how to go from point A to point B. Now that you're focusing on the customer experience, how has that journey been for you all?
I think the best analogy is real estate. So, you know, I've bought a few properties in my life, but, you know, like, I'm not doing this every day. So the most important thing I need from that real estate agent is to almost have like a shared vision timeline of like, kind of where are we in the whole process? Who's the bottleneck? Let me explain what we need to do next. why it matters, who's responsible, you know? So I think like people generally have already made their mind up by the time they're talking to you. Your job is to guide them through this process they don't do very often. So same thing with hiring. I do it all the time. They're running their business and then they come up for air and then they need two people this month. And then they go back and run their business for 6 months. So whenever they hire, the more somebody can guide them, I think the better.
So you get the white glove experience. So you remove the friction and you solve the problem of what comes next. And when, as you are focused on a customer experience, do you put yourself in a customer's shoes from when you were starting off of recruiting talent?
I think kind of, you know, it's something that I would encourage every business owner to do is like go through your own sales cycle, you know, go through your own delivery cycle. It's fascinating what you can find.
It is. and reason, well, for the long pauses, I'm listening to you and I'm also listening to the background as well. So just let you know. But that is true, just to actually go through your own customer journey, because there's problems that you won't be able to see until you go through the process.
Right.
I literally did that for my calendar. I book a meeting and then I go through the whole process. I did a webinar Wednesday, and well, I was supposed to do one Tuesday and Wednesday. The one that I was supposed to do Tuesday, I didn't receive no notifications.
Okay.
I'm like, what's going on? I know I had to set up the workflow. I know I had to set up the emails.
Right.
I received nothing. And I went back and looked at the software. I'm like, it got deleted. Why did it get deleted? I don't know. I reached out to customer service trying to understand why it got deleted. And that was like, well, unfortunately, we don't know.
Yeah.
When you go through your own customer experience, you start to see problems.
Yeah.
Are you all still finding problems as you go through the customer experience?
Every day. You know, that's what I think is fun about business, is there's always something to fix.
And how does that help Plug Technologies?
Oh, I mean, you know, if we can catch a mistake before somebody else does, it's a lot better, right?
So how does that help the feedback from the customers? Like, okay, y'all saw the problem first, and if they don't see it, they don't recognize the problem.
Well, I'll give you an example. So we put together like a comprehensive guide on what talent costs in Latin America. And, you know, we're working with a marketing agency. It's kind of all ready to go. And then my partner saw the ad for it, entered his information, and then nothing happened. Like, sort of like, oh my gosh. You know, we spent hours and hours on perfecting this like big guide, and people that want it can't even get it. So I'm glad that we discovered it before. Hopefully not that many people, you know, had that issue before we found it.
So y'all continue. Okay. You give me some, what is it called? Some clarification that I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as an entrepreneur, your journey can be lonely and you can feel like you're doing everything by yourself. Like you're the only one dealing with this particular problem, but you just share with me, you got that problem too. So, as I was looking at your website, you have six steps on how you help. Hold on, what was it? Yeah, six steps on how you help. Your clients find the ideal talent. Do you remember the six steps or some of the six steps that you have on your website?
Oh, I mean, I'm not so into the day to day and that stuff anymore.
Okay, no worries at all. So earlier you said something about custom sourcing. Let's just go with step number two, custom sourcing. Do you all still customize everything for different clients?
Yeah. And I'll give you some origination on that. So that very first company, you know, where I raised money for, we built like a whole solution company. So that meant we had our own architects and project managers and product people and leads and so forth. So the good thing is we were all like really technically competent, and the people we were hiring were technically competent. The downside is everyone's got egos, right? So maybe our engineer says that, like our engineer who's like leading the hiring says, oh man, this guy's not very good, but maybe the client really likes them, or vice versa. The client's like, this person's terrible, but our team's like, no, he's great. You know, so this ego clash all the time of, well, are they good? Or are they not? You know? So I got rid of all that noise. And now it's only about, the only bias we care about is what that hiring manager cares about. Right. So we just try to align, you know, this is the role, this is the culture, this is the baggage that they bring to the table. You know, like some people are, they only want like hackers. Some people only want like PhDs. Some people don't want job hoppers. Some people love job hoppers. Some people don't want contractors. So, you know, some people love computer science grads. Some people don't. So there's this, like everyone kind of brings their own experiences, their own reality, their own baggage. And what we're trying to say is like, that's fine. Like, we want you to be authentic. So let's just all be real and we'll find you exactly what you want. Right.
And so when you remove the different layers of communication, you start to see that you have a better functioning team.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Okay. So, you know, so recently I learned that you have to treat your team members, just as much as your customers. Like you have to care for the people that's on your team just as much as your customers. When you did that, did you start to see a transition from how people were communicating, or did it actually help productivity?
So like just around communication with team members and like how that, I think, you know, productivity is, I think it's an insightful question because productivity is, you know, always like tied with communication and how people are talking, and it's hard to get that right because when you're early, you don't need like a full intense, you know, CRM, right? And you know, you kind of live off of like email and Slack and Excel spreadsheets and Google Sheets, and then you buy your first piece of software that does like one or two things really well. And then you buy another one, but they don't, you know, it's not totally talking to each other. It's not all automated. And before you know it, like you've scaled and you've got this like duct tape, you know, operating system. So I don't know how to not have that, but I know that once you have enough money to fix it, you should fix it.
Okay. Before you had enough money to fix it, how did you go about fixing it?
I mean, it's just pain, you know, you just gotta take the pain.
Okay. You gotta take the pain, and the pain is going to teach you more about your business than you can ever imagine.
Yeah. You'll learn how to take a lot of pain in entrepreneurship.
Now that you are more established in business and you have your team members, you have the systems, you have everything in place, when you receive new pain, how does that affect the daily operation?
When we have new people, like how does that impact it?
Yeah, the new pain, like how does it get? Yes.
Well, I mean, like entrepreneurship is just pain, you know, every day, right? So, and then as you get bigger, it's just bigger pain. But you know, but you hope that you get into a position where you've got the right people that can solve problem. Like you don't have to solve every problem. You know, that's kind of the hope.
Because you have the right team around you, they can solve the other problems.
Yeah.
Okay. That make a lot of sense. So back to Plug Talk, Plug Technologies. What are the next goals that you're looking to accomplish for the Plug Technologies?
So, you know, as I said on the top of the show, that 10 million mark is like my big white whale, you know, like, you know, always trying to go for that. So if we can hit that, we did a lot of the right things to scale.
Okay. Man, you say you haven't hit the 10 mark yet, 10 mil mark, and you're already in the process of doing it.
Yeah. Not in a single season, you know? So, you know, it's always where I've been striving for, you know, but I need to get all the scale stuff right.
How would you go about doing that though? Like you say, you need to get the scale stuff right.
Yeah. You know, just have the infrastructure, you know, and headcount's not everything too. You know, I'd rather have a small team of all the right people and then enough automation built in. I think we're headed there though.
That makes a lot of sense now. One thing about automation is that it's going to save you a lot of time. And as it's saving you a lot of time, it's helping you become more efficient. You actually said that. Hold on. There was a video that you said something about being, here it is right here. Be effective before you try to be efficient.
Oh yeah. That's like, there's a few things that I ever say a lot, you know, you can throw it on a t-shirt. That's one of them. I think a lot of us, we try to be efficient first, but like there's no real scale. So, you know, meaning like stop worrying about your cost to acquire a customer, just acquire a bunch of customers first and then start looking like, okay, how can we be more efficient? But if like your very first customer, you're like, I'm trying to get this at $7 or something or whatever the cost is, like, you don't even know if you're good at it yet.
And it goes back to what you had said earlier, to get your first customer. So don't worry about everything else. Go get your first customer.
That's right.
Because when you're effective, you become more efficient. That make a lot of sense. You just painted that picture for me. All right, so we got one last segment, and it's called Best for Last. And it's when I ask you four questions, and you answer it within 30 seconds.
Okay. All right.
So question number one, what are you grateful for?
What am I grateful for? My kids. I've got a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old, and they bring me joy every day.
Wow. Okay. Question number two, do you have any regrets?
Any regrets? Honestly, I regret not being an entrepreneur a lot earlier. You know, I was 35, so 10 years. This has been a 10-year journey. But once you realize like this world is just compounding, you know, like everything you do is for you, all the learnings are for you. And the problems I'm battling today, like that I've faced the last 10 years, get right past them, right through them easy, you know. You get this confidence, this thick skin. So anyway, you know, long answer to your question, but I wish I started a lot earlier.
That make a lot of sense. Question number three, what is your biggest lesson while founding Plug Technologies?
Ooh, while founding Plug. Okay, so by then I think I'd been a little more veteran. I spent a lot of money to get a superstar, you know, and he's been everything that I've ever wanted. So this guy's name is Ruben. He's the full-time president for Plug. And he's been amazing.
That is a great lesson. That is the biggest lesson. And then last question, what does failure is knowledge mean to you?
Failure is knowledge. Man, I mean, this is, you know, like we talk a lot about, you know, wrong salespeople, not doing sales, you know, tinkering with websites and not spending money right. But man, all this is just experience is wisdom, right? You know, and failure is experience is wisdom. You know, these three words go together really, really well.
I definitely agree. Brian, man, this has been great. How can people learn more about Plug Technologies? How can they learn more about Brian? How can they connect with you?
I appreciate the opportunity to share my story. Plug Technologies website is plugg.tech. And if you want to email me, just throw a Brian in the front of that, brian@plug.tech.
Sounds great, Brian, man. This has been great. I'm about to stop recording. Remember, you're only one failure away from your life changing. So this has been great. Thank you for coming on to the Business Knowledge Podcast.